Car Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
So going back just to finish that item that I did on Friday on new car sales, I'm quite staggered by the way, the number of new cars in the first 10 months of the year, 120,495. That's 20,000 car more new cars this year in 2023 to end of October than there were last year. In October alone, 2,178 cars were sold, but that was down by 500 cars on last year's. Light commercial vehicles, 28,000 this year compared with 22,000 for the same time last year. Heavy goods vehicles, 2,500 to date this year as opposed to 2,000 last year. So there's a 22% increase. Now the issue of used car imports, and people are saying find it difficult to get a used car nowadays, is that in 2023, 42,463 used cars have been imported into the country. That's a 4% increase in last year when nearly 41,000 were imported. In October alone, 4,124 cars were imported compared to 3,335 October 2022. We chatted with Tom Cullen, Deputy Director General of SIMI, the Society of the Motor Industry, Irish Motor Industry, on Friday in regards to electric vehicles. And year to date, the sale of electric vehicles is up 46%, albeit a relatively small number. In 2023, 22,280 new electric vehicles to date, compared with 15,000 last year. In October, 607 new electric vehicles compared to 737 last year. Top five selling new car brands: Toyota, Volkswagen, Hyundai, Skoda and Kia in that order. And the models, top selling models in 2023, the Hyundai Tucson, Kia Sportage, Toyota Corolla, the Toyota Yaris Cross and Volkswagen. And a look at some of the county issues and numbers, which is the one I promised you most. In 2023, 5,144 new cars sold in Kildare compared to 4,627 last year. That's an 11% increase. In Carlow, the numbers were 1,246 this year to 1,171 last year. In Dublin, 53,000 to 41,000. In our neighbours in Laois, 1,343 new cars this year as opposed to 1,226 last year. In Mead, 4,114 opposed to 3,639 last year. And in Offaly, 1,299, just 100 up on last year. And in Wicklow, 2,740 new cars this year as opposed to 2,566. Give you those Kildare figures again, they're double that. From January to October this year, 5,144 new cars sold in the county as opposed to 4,627 last year. New electrical registrations then in the county in Kildare, 1,235 this year as opposed to 832 last year. In Laois, 212 to 156. In Meath, 1,022 to 674. In Dublin, 10,500 compared to 7,000 last year. In Carlow, 210 as opposed to 133. Offaly, 166 compared to 121. And Wicklow, 879 compared to 608. To give you those Kildare numbers again, 1,235 electric vehicles sold this year in the county, January to October, as opposed to 832 last year. Just wanted to round up some of those numbers for you. On the way, we're going to be speaking to Thomas Wall, a family iconically associated with greyhound racing here in County Kildare for generations, about their new care centre for Irish retired greyhounds. Now, just before we go to that very interesting story about Irish retired greyhounds, Hannah, if you're listening to me there, I want to take you up on that 800 primary teaching post going unfilled, according to the INTO. With, it says, according to this survey that's revealed, 70 of those posts are vacant in County Kildare primary schools. The school surveyed also anticipate having an additional 1,200 vacancies within the next 3 months, if you don't mind. 800 teaching posts in primary schools are unfilled as a result of the shortage of school teachers. That's according to the survey carried out by the NTO. Now, what I can't understand is, how can we have 800 primary teaching jobs unfilled? There was a time when you couldn't get a teaching job. Such was the demand on it. And one would think that a job that is very well paid, with pensions that are subvented by the Department of Education, in other words, you get a much, much better pension compared to what you would in the private sector, and you have to contribute less than you would in the private sector, etc. Not to mention the good old holidays, the couple of weeks at Christmas, the midterm breaks in November and spring, and then the couple of months off in the summer, even in the case of primary schools. So what did the INTO say about the survey, Hannah?
Yeah, so the INTO says that schools surveyed have also indicated that they anticipate having an additional 1,200 vacancy within the next 3 months. The survey has confirmed that Dublin and other urban areas are being disproportionately affected, with 63% of all vacancies in County Dublin. So disadvantaged schools, Gaels, Gulnas and special schools are also experiencing particular difficulties finding teachers. And 1,094 primary and special schools responded to the survey, which was carried out in the first week of October. This represents 35% of all schools in these sectors.
All right, and as we said, 70 jobs, teaching jobs here in County Kildare schools are vacant. Now, what that means, of course, is the knock-on effect, because it means for all of the teachers within a school, they're trying to pick up the slack, as are many principals who then become teaching principals. Now, that's a very onerous task, to run a school on the one hand and to be teaching a class all day in the others. And in other cases, I imagine, classes are being bundled together, two at a time, which is like a step back a century ago when, you know, first, second and third class would go together in small schools and fifth and sixth, etc., etc., etc. Hard to believe this is going on in this country, with the Minister Norma Foley rushing to ensure us all the time of how good things are in the schools. I wonder, is that why she left teaching and went into politics? Now, 28% of all participating schools reported long-term vacancies. That percentage rose to 50% of the country's most disadvantaged DESH schools and Gaels Scoileanna, and to 43% of special schools. We're hearing regularly here on our programmes, Kildare Today with Owen Beattie and Hannah, and on this programme, Kildare Focus, parents who can't get a place in schools because schools are oversubscribed for student places, but they can't get enough teachers. And the survey is bearing out this. The INTO said, obviously, the housing crisis and living costs are impacting on the recruitment and retention of teachers. What else did they say in regards to long-term vacancies, Hannah?
So in relation to long-term vacancies, the INTO said that just 72% of the schools who responded had been able to fill all their vacancies, with 306 schools still having vacant posts. One school had 9 vacant permanent posts and another had 8. So 212 schools had a long-term substitute vacancies, with 10 schools having 4 vacant substitute posts and 18 having 3. And 34% of the special schools in the survey had vacant permanent posts. So of the 109 DESH Band 1 schools that responded, there were 45 vacant permanent posts, 81 fixed-term posts and 55 unfilled substitute posts.
Now, that's remarkable stuff altogether, because DESH schools are schools that cater for the less socio-economically well-off areas, disadvantaged areas, areas that have a lot of societal problems and cost-of-living problems and that. They're DESH schools. And 45 vacant permanent posts, which means these schools are having enough teachers to teach their students, students that are already disadvantaged, which means that you're compounding their disadvantage by sending these kids out into society with a less than desirable standard of education. Now, of course, blaming the impact of the housing crisis and escalating living costs on the recruitment, the union's Deputy General Secretary, Deirdre Connor, said all options must be explored. The majority teachers' positions are fulfilled. And moving down to that report, Hannah, what did the department, how did they respond to the survey?
So responding to this survey, the Department of Education spokesperson said that while schools in certain locations are experiencing challenges in both recruiting teachers and obtaining substitute teachers, the vast majority of sanctioned teacher positions are filled. The department said that the rate of resignation and retirement is very low by any standard and is consistent with previous years. It is said while recruitment of teachers is ongoing, it is not possible at this stage to advise on the current number of vacant teaching positions.
That's a remarkable statement for the Department of Education to make.
It is.
An absolutely remarkable statement, is it not?
It is. It's kind of going against the figures that we just said a few minutes ago.
Yeah, so. And you have the Department of Education, which is tasked with overseeing the education sector in this country. And I'll quote again. It is not possible, they say, at this stage to advise on the current number of vacant teaching positions. Why? Why, Norma Foley? How come your department doesn't know how many vacant teaching positions are in primary schools in this country? And then they come on to say, we're going to be doing this, we're going to be doing that in the coming year. Now, in 2023, more than 2,700 student teachers registered with the Teaching Council. And in special education, the department said schools are front-loaded, I love that term, with ring-fenced resources, and that close to 20,000 special needs teachers and 21,000 SEN teachers have been funded across the education system. That's fine for the department to say. It doesn't know how many vacant positions there are. Well, there's a survey by the INTO that's just out this very day in relation to that. Is there any wonder there are difficulties in our schools? Anyway, let's get to a more positive aspect. Tom Wall, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Clan.
And thanks, Tom, for waiting very patiently there on the phone while we went on about the situation. It's quite disgraceful, I have to say, in regards to that scenario. So, Tom, your family, synonymous with greyhound racing. Tell me how far back it goes.
Well, my father bought his first greyhound when he was 16. That would have been 1938.
My God.
Yeah.
That's 62 and 23. That's 85 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been involved?
We've always been involved since.
He was only 16 at the time.
Yeah.
And Tom had another claim to fame because he played football with a tie and senior football for Kildare.
Kildare, yeah, yeah. None of us ever took a after him.
That's your grandfather now?
No, my father.
Your father?
My father, yeah.
Is he still with us?
No.
Right, okay. He played club football with a tie.
Yeah.
And senior football for the county. Was he what position did he man, do you know?
Oh, I don't. You'd have to ask Michael that now. He's the footballer in the family.
Right, which Walls are you, by the way?
Irish Town.
Wow. Right, because there's a number of Wall families all around the area, ranging from Jack Wall's crew out in Castle Mitchell, but Jack formerly Castle Dermot, of course.
Yeah.
Back to Breda Wall's people. They're out to Kilkee Road there. And there was a Wall's, I know, in Chanterlands as well. Yeah. And as yourselves. But you use the prefix Kilgowan. Why?
Yeah. Well, that's where when my father bought the pub and the farm in 1959. The area is Kilgowan, so I always held it as a prefix.
Right, you corrected me there, I noticed very subtly. Is it Kilgowan or Kilgowan?
Well, people call it either.
Either in that. So yeah. you're the famous Walls of Kilgowan. I have you now. I have you now in relation to the pub. And you have three brothers, or the three of you there, Michael, Thomas, and Lawrence. Yeah. So you're the Thomas.
Yeah. Well, when we were growing up, there was five of us, Declan and Annette, I have one sister.
Right.
And when we were growing up, we were all involved. You know, as kids, we had to be all involved with the greyhounds. Like, and you walked greyhounds before you went to school, and you walked greyhounds when you came home from school.
You were fairly fit after that, I'd say.
You would be all right.
And you had no choice either.
No.
At what time in the morning would you be walking the greyhounds?
Well, you'd be in school for, say, 9 o'clock, you'd be walking greyhounds from 8:15.
Would you? Really?
Yeah.
And how?
That would be after a bucket feeding 20 calves.
All right, lovely. Yeah. I've always said, if you want to know what hardship is like, talk to country children.
Go back.
They know what it's like. Never mind your old townies who are totally spoiled, you know. And the SUV has to drive them into the school gate, and preferably, Mammy might be complaining she can't drive them into the classroom in case the little darlings.
We often walked home from school.
Yeah.
Not been a problem either.
And that would have been a fair distance. What school did you go to?
Halberstown.
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. That would be a nice spin.
That'd be about 2 miles.
Yeah, but certainly. Given, tell me about this thing of walking greyhounds. I have an uncle. Well, he departed about 2 years ago. But he was, like yourself, involved with greyhounds all his life. And he often told me about walking them. But I often felt, walking a greyhound, surely is that counterproductive?
No, because the walking on the ground would be for exercise and to empty them as well. Like for them to go to the toilet.
I love the way you put that, to empty them.
Empty them.
Because given the energy that greyhounds use now and whatever else, you know, I have often wondered, is walking enough for them? And then you headed off to school. You were 15 years of age in school in Newbridge. This is your brother, is it, Michael? He remembers his Friday routine was to wait outside Cox's pub.
Yeah.
Obviously waiting outside.
Waiting for the dog cart to come in. It had to be printed in Bradley's printers.
Right.
Wait for the dog cart to come in to Cox's. That's where the card was sold.
We don't want to get Michael into trouble now, but then according to what I'm seeing, he'd study the card and head off for lunch to study the form and forget about returning to school for the afternoon.
Often happened.
Right, tell me about Michael's wife, Teresa.
Now, Teresa was on the board. Well, her family, her extended family would have had greyhounds. Well,
they're Kellys, were they?
Yeah, and that's Michael and Teresa's brother were great friends, and that's how Michael and Teresa met.
Were they from out around the same area?
Yeah, they're only about, what would it be, about 4 miles from us.
Okay, should suddenly a throw of a trot for a greyhound or whatever else, you know? So everybody in the family, I note, by the way, that during this time, the courting routine for Michael and Teresa was Saturday night at Shelburne Park. Where at that time they still raced on grass. And then the last film at the Newbridge Cinema, the old late show for the bit of courting and whispering sweet nothings in each other's ears.
Oh, I don't know about that now.
You never did that, no?
No. No.
Anyway, you've had some fine dogs in your time. Have you not?
Yeah, we've had a good few winners down the years. You know, we've bred a good few winners as well for other people.
And what would be, tell me about some of the notable achievements.
Well, Hanover Laddie, our vets in Dundalk, they bought him and he won a big stake. And Brody's Magic, then, that we bred, holds the sprint track record in Dundalk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got a good few winners now.
I have to say, one of my favourite sporting events of the year is watching the Irish Greyhound Derby. The sheer athleticism of these dogs. But as you know, Tom, and part of the reason we have you on today, there have been grave concerns expressed in recent times about the welfare of greyhounds also.
Yeah. Well, the only thing about that now is the greyhound racing, it's so regulated now. I mean, when there's an app that comes in on your phone, if you have a dog that's racing and it suddenly stops racing for, maybe it's a bitch and she's in season or something, they look for updates straight away.
They want to make sure the dog isn't being pepped up with illegal substance and pulled out for a while. Is that it?
Yeah, no, not even that. It's just when dogs, if they get a small injury or anything, they would be out racing for, say, a dog should run every 4 to 5 weeks.
Okay.
And if there's no sign of the dog running, you will get they'll look for an update on your phone and the app.
Yeah.
As to what's going on. And you will have inspections anyway.
Right.
Like welfare officers will come out and inspect.
Are those inspections
anyway?
Are they announced or are they surprise inspections?
No, just arrive at the door.
And is that widespread in the industry now, Tom?
It is, yeah.
Okay, because I've interviewed both the current and the previous CEOs of Greyhound Ireland, and we were discussing that because in recent years there have been concerns. For example, when greyhounds are retired, the welfare of what happens to them, with many saying that they were escorted that they were exported to countries where they could either be abused or indeed even eaten.
No, that doesn't happen anymore. Like, in the last 3 years, there's been 6,000 greyhounds rehomed. And they're through the Irish care centres. And also, there's a great network of care centres in Europe and in North America.
Right. I have to say, they make wonderful pets from everyone. So that brings us round, Tom, to what we're talking about. You're a care centre manager now for the Irish Retired Greyhound Trust. Tell me a little about that.
Well, when the greyhounds retire, they go to the nursery first and they'll spend 5 or 6 weeks in the nursery and then they come to us and we get them used to dealing with small dogs and children and all that for rehoming.
Right.
And people then apply, if they go to the IRGT website, and they can fill in a form if they want to adopt. And they will have an inspection at their home. Someone will come and have a chat with them, see what the home is like, you know, what kids are in the home. Yeah. And then we try and match the dogs we have to the people. Like some dogs, you know, you get a dog that wants a quiet life, so that dog is going to be suitable for one person living on their own or an older couple. And then you have livelier dogs that want kids. You know,
yeah.
And you'll nearly know, because we know what the dog's personalities are. Like, they're with us for 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, and your kennels are now part of the Leinster Care Centre. So yeah. Potential adopters can come to meet their potential new family pet.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still on the family place?
No, just only around the corner.
From the family place?
From Kilgone, yeah.
From Kilgone. By the way, just something comes into my head. Is the pub still on the go?
No.
Do you know what?
Not for sale.
You know anyone
with loads of money.
And of course, it became a victim of the bypass, is that it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. Can I just say to you that it was one of my favourite places to call and sit by a fire, if memory serves me correctly.
I remember you coming in.
Oh, over the years. It was a lovely place to stop on the road. Yeah. And so many places, you know, have gone to the wall. I was driving down the country on early on Saturday morning, about 7 o'clock, and at least 30 kilometres of the M7 is now closed for works of some sort. So we were detoured onto the old road. Yeah. And as I drove through places like Mount Rath, Castletown, Boris and Ossory, and I saw so many that used to be fantastic businesses now shuttered because the bypass had done away with the... It's one of the downsides, like Route 66 in the United States. I'll tell you one thing before we talk more about greyhounds. Your place out there at Walls of Kilgone was one of the places in the country to drop in for quality food and an old sup of you know what as well. Yeah. So, well done to your family. Now, why did you get involved in it, Tom?
In the care centre?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose probably natural progression. Because we've always been involved with greyhounds. Basically, it's a love of greyhounds. That's what it is.
And has it been passed on to a future generation? I see the name Laurie McMahon popping up in a photograph.
Yeah, that's Annette's daughter.
Right.
So, and we have show dogs as well. And Laurie would be always here with the show dogs.
Right.
So she's come on board now with the greyhounds. But she'll be over and there, live next door to me, so she's over and back the whole time.
Right, so tell me then, and remind again, if people out there, and it's great to know that these greyhounds are being taken such good care of now, and here in the county as well. So people, how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to explore the idea of adopting a greyhound?
Yeah, well, what they do is they go on the Irish Retired Greyhound Trust, IRGT, go on their website and they fill in a potential adoption form and they will get a home visit then from one of the people that are involved in it. And like basically to check the home, check for the people, and if the people have any questions to ask about, you know, the adoption process, they go through all that with them. And then I will get an email with the form filled out and I can have a look at it. And then sometimes, you know, as I said to you, different dogs. There's dogs will suit a family with teenagers, and then there's dogs will suit maybe a single person living on their own or an older couple. You know, you kind of get to know, you nearly have an idea.
Yeah.
What dog will suit them. And what you do is they come and have a look, and I'd say to them, you know, this is the dog I think, but they can go through the whole
lot of them. Great stuff. Know. How many dogs have you out there at the minute?
Nine,
okay. So, and I know some people who have adopted greyhounds over the years, and people think, you know, they'd be leaping over the chandeliers and kitchen tables and stuff like that.
Not a chance.
They're the most gentle of dogs you can...
Well, what people don't realise is they're the laziest. dog out of the home. They are, though. Get out in the morning, go for their little bit of a run, back in and just get me a couch somewhere so I can lay up for the day.
Well, I know I often spoke to Dolores Ruse on the Kildare Today programme in the morning, and she used to tell me about the greyhounds, some of them being real pets lying in front of the fire and whatever else. And I'll tell you, if it was anything like the fireside at Walls of Kilgown, when that wonderful centre was in the go, they'd be very comfortable indeed. Tom, it's lovely talking to you.
Thanks very much, Clem.
And not at all. And thank you for joining us this afternoon. And if anybody wants to find out more, the website is grireland.ie. Yeah. That's the main website.
Yeah, and IRGT, the Irish Retired Greyhound Trust.
Right, IRGT.ie, and you can find out more. Tom, regards to all the Walls of Kilgown and an iconic family, and it's so wonderful to know your greyhound history, but also to know now that you're turning it to such matters like welfare. And could I remind everybody, as I'm at it, that the Irish Greyhound Board has also announced that it's doing free greyhound racing for everyone in the audience this week. And Newbridge Greyhound Track on Friday night will be an open evening for anyone that wants to go and enjoy greyhound racing. And I have to say, I'm one of those that went a couple of times there. We had a KFM outing at one stage and we had a ball. Some of the staff who knew only about the number of legs the greyhound had were actually winning, whereas those of us who thought we knew something about greyhounds were losing. Thus is the enjoyment of a great, great night. Tom Wall, regards to everyone out there in Kilgown, and well done on all of that.
Thanks very much, Clem.
Not at all. Great talking to you. Super story, I think, anyway. Let's move on then to difficulties being experienced across the sector, and in regards to what is being experienced, I should say, in regards to different things, which has just disappeared in me now for a minute. If you just hold for a second while I do this. And it's regarding the hospitality sector, where apparently hundreds of businesses are shutting down. And it felt like a bereavement in the family as the hospitality sector is hit by a raft of closures as business owners struggle with soaring costs, so said the headline. With the Restaurants Association of Ireland warning that hundreds of businesses are barely breaking even and expect many more closures to be announced in the coming months. President of the Restaurants Association of Ireland is the Kildare man, of course, Paul Lenehan of Hearts Bar in Kildare. Paul, welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Clem. Thank you very much.
Restaurants, cafes, gastro bars and catering companies across the country being forced to shut, you're saying. Why?
It's quite simple. It's the continuing rising costs of it is of doing business, Clem. You know, not surprised to see those stories coming out, and we're seeing more and more of them. Data we have, we've already seen about 140 businesses closed over the country in the past 4 months. Look, you're always going to see closures, but there's definitely more, and there's certainly more and more on the way with the rising costs and the implementation of the new 13.5% VAT rate that kicked in on the 1st of September. Things are not good.
But you did have that preferred VAT rate of 9% for a couple of years, did you not?
Ken, we had it for the bones of 10 years, and I think when you take that into account, businesses, new businesses have opened in the last 6, 7, 10 years, whatever you put in the figure on it, and this was the VAT rate that they've always had. The change from a sudden look, and it was well publicised. They were looking to take it. It went back to about, I think it went back to 13.5% for a short time, and then just pre-COVID or just during COVID, they reduced it back down to 9%. But it was a measure brought in back in 2010 originally, 2011. And obviously it was there because the industry was in crisis. But the industry is still in crisis. That is the main issue. We are nowhere, we're not nearly back to the figures of anything pre-COVID. And the industry is in awful trouble. The cost associated with the fuel is huge. We're seeing domestic rates lower, but we're not seeing it any gas or electricity in the commercial sector. So that, coupled with the price of food, the wages which will be increasing now in January, and most of all, the biggest by far is the VAT at 13.5%, of which those VAT bill, that'll all be due now by the 19th of November, when the first of that VAT is due to be paid. That's when people are really, really, really going to see it, just before Christmas.
And with respect, Paul, many of the reasons you're outlining there are many of the reasons that are basically afflicting everybody in the country, not just in the hospitality sector. So Why in particular regarding yourselves?
Well, we're a low margin. We're a very low margin business. So we're there, like our margins have been slashed down to pretty much everybody. Not everybody, but there's a huge amount of business out there that are at break even or at below break even. And that is no way to run a business. Nobody wants to be getting into business that's not sustainable. And the fact of the matter is, with all the costs that are now associated with running a business in the hospitality sector, it is not sustainable. And that's why we're seeing these huge amounts of closures. And there will be an awful lot more coming in 2024, it's guaranteed.
And what about in terms of, and I have to put this to you, the prices, we'll say the price points in all these, whether they be restaurants, cafe shops, whatever else, that the price point is too high. And given the pressures on people around the country, for the self-same electricity costs, food costs, fuel costs, everything else, that they can't afford to eat out as much as before. Is it possible for your industry maybe to become more competitive?
I think the industry is expensive to eat out, but these are all the costs that we've had to pass on just to stay sustainable, to be able to remain open. I think what people, like, we're fully aware that people going out on a Wednesday night or either be a Saturday night, they have a certain amount of money to spend. So we're not seeing the spend of people's pocket actually going up. But what we're seeing is they're still going out to spend the same. They're not getting the same value because they're not getting maybe the 2 to 3 courses for the same amount that they wanted originally spent. But at the same time, there's only the same amount of money been spent. So that's why our margins and everything associated is taking a hit. So, you know, we understand it is expensive. It is without a shadow of doubt. And you can look around it, but you will find places. But it is very, very difficult for us to maintain our margins and to sustain a business that is worthy of remaining open with the costs associated in today's business, today's day.
Yeah, and I know you're talking about costs and that, but I mean, just briefly, if you would, for me, why is it comparatively and relatively cheaper to eat out abroad than it is in Ireland? Because generally, the reaction you will get is it's very, very expensive to eat out. It's nearly prohibitive, other than for very, very special occasions. And obviously, very, very special occasions, being occasional as they are, is not sufficient to sustain your businesses.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, straight away, the first thing you can look to there is that the excise on drink in Ireland is probably the highest in Europe. It's huge. We also have one of the highest minimum wages. So our wages are very high. And I'm not saying people should. People are entitled to be well paid. But it's also a cost that we have to bear. So, you know, we have very high costs. So our food costs are very high. We're an island. We import everything. So when people compare it to Spain, like, you could land in the middle of Marbella and Orange Square and pay a fortune for a meal in the main tourist areas. But yes, you can go up the coast and you'll find, and where a lot of Irish people go, they will find a lot cheaper meals. And it is always a comparison that people use, but it's not a fair comparison because the costs and the cost of living do not equal what we have here in Ireland.
And I presume you'd like to see the VAT rate reduced again, obviously, because you've been citing it during this interview as one of the main components that's compromising the sustainability of your businesses. What would you say to a listener who has just said the government bailed out hotels, I'm reading a text here, during COVID, and the VAT rate was at 9%, that was supposed to be passed on to the punter, but it wasn't?
Well, we're not calling for a VAT for the whole sector. We're looking for VAT on food-operated businesses because we believe that the 9% VAT rate is the right rate for our industry. And it's quite simple. It's literally that. The other industries, there's other costs associated with them, but our industry, we believe that the 9% is the right rate. We've other costs coming along next year, as I said. You've the autumn enrollment of the pensions, which is something that businesses will have to contribute to as well.
Yes.
You've also got all the warehouse VAT that's going to have to be paid back. There's loads and loads of businesses out there that come the 1st of May are going to have to start paying their warehouse VAT. And then, of course, you do have the increase of the minimum wage coming in January. So we are so far away from getting this sorted, but the industry is in dire need of them. So yes, we are calling for, the number one priority for the Restaurant Association of Ireland is to go back to a 9% VAT rate.
Okay.
Because it is imperative that it happens.
Yeah, and obviously what your remarks imply, this is for the preservation and survival of the industry.